Okay, yeah, so we're start, so first we're just going back. So last time we spoke about Haggadah and the Gemara. We're going to start back on, actually, I'm just going to refer to the sheet from Shir 43. We have the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. It's at the very end of the Masechta, Daf Ayin Vav, the bottom of Amid Aleph. Says, how do you do Haggadah? How do you kosher something with boiling water? It says, Rav Huna says, Yora Kitana Besuch Yora Gedola. You dip a small pot into a big pot. So then Gemara says, how do you do a big pot? And it says, Rav Akavya had this technique where you make an artificial rim to the pot with dough. Then you can fill it up, and that'll kosher the top rim of the pot. So, just to tweak what we said last time, there do seem to be two different shitas in this Gemara, meaning it seems like Rav Huna, he holds the only way to do Haggadah is by dipping in boiling water. So that's what we said last time, but we said he may hold that you have to kosher the outside of the pot. I want to retract that, that you kosher the side of the pot that was used in with the non-kosher food. So if you usually cook with the inside surface of a pot, that's the only side you have to kosher. And even Rav Huna agrees to that. But all the Rav Huna would say that the top rim, which becomes non-kosher from splatters of treif, he holds that those splatters have to be koshered with full Haggadah by dipping it into a kli rishon, just like the inside of the pot. And Rav Akavya comes along and is mechadesh that to kosher the top rim, since it only became treif with splatters, which is not as hot as being in the pot itself. It cools down a little bit. It's splatters are really a type of eroi, of pouring. So all to kosher it, you also just need splatters. That's how Rabba explains it at the end of that Gemara that we read last time. He says, kibolo kakpolto. The same way it absorbs, that's how you kosher it. So Rav Huna apparently didn't hold you apply kibolo kakpolto here. He said, even though it was only splatters of treif, it has to be dipped in a... He wasn't technically talking about a large pot, but yeah, this is how Berkowitz and others understand. It implies that Rabba is saying that Rav Akavya was mechadish something here, right? So it sounds like that it wasn't obvious before Rav Akavya came around that you can kosher the rim by just the splatter koshering technique. So he's introducing that idea. Kibolo kachpolto, it's enough to kosher the top rim with splatters.
If I could just clarify,
yeah.
And I know this was discussed previously, but in terms of the nature of this dough, is it that the dough is to serve as a thing that gets really hot and koshers the rim that way, or is the dough like something that like so that you could like fill it up all the way to the top and it prevents boiling water from spilling over and making and hurting somebody? Like
So it's more like the latter, but we're actually going to talk about one moment what exactly the point of that of that artificial rim is, that dough is. So that's just the first adjustment I want to make. The second adjustment is so last time we said what is the point? Why do you have to make this dough rim? So what we said was that it lets you raise the level of the water. So normally you can't boil water, the rim of the pot can't be in the, right? You can't fill it. The water doesn't touch the rim, even if it's totally full, it doesn't touch the rim. Unless it splatters. But what we said last time is that it extends the rim. So now the rim is in the pot, in effect, right? Because the boiling water is going to be hitting the rim. Because it's, right, there's a new top level to the pot. that your dough rim creates. So that is how, now if you look on the Shear 44 sheet, the new sheet, this is how Rev. David Cohn explains it. This is how I always understood it. That is how he explains it. Take a look at the bottom left. This is all from the chapter called Large Pots. The very bottom left, he says, at the end of the line, the top line, what if there is no other pot which is large enough to contain the non-kosher one? Meaning, he's just explaining, he's saying over the Gemara here. The Gemara suggests that the person stick dough along the outside upper edges of the pot to create a band or ridge of dough, which effectively raises the top of the pot a bit. Then, when the pot is filled with water and brought to a boil, the top of the pot and its real rim will have contact with the Hagala water. Well, I'm not certain that he's saying what I was saying, that like now you the dough holds more, it lets the pot hold more water. So it puts the rim into the pot, so to speak, like the walls of the pot. So I thought he was saying that at first. Now I'm not convinced if he's taking a side on this. Yeah.
What's that dough made of?
It's made out of dough. It's made out of wheat. Yes, it's chametz.
So how does this work for Pesach?
Right. So
I was gonna I was thinking so maybe it's a type of
so
like
I think
clay.
The Shulchan Aruch says you use teat, which is like mud or clay.
Okay.
Pesach. And okay. I think he may talk. Yeah, that's discussed.
Hearing
absolutely.
Dough and koshering for Pesach
absolutely.
Is like
right. Well, we're talking about treif right now, right?
So, right. We're talking about treif. Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, but what bothered me about this is, and again, it doesn't. Rabbi Cohen doesn't talk about this in detail. But what's bothering me about this is that Rabbi said the chiddush of Rav Akavia was kibolo kachpalto. If something becomes treif by splattering, it becomes kashered with splattering. It doesn't have to be dipped into actual boiling water. It could be, since it didn't, right, it could, even though splashing is not as hot, it doesn't have the same effect as putting it in the pot, that's enough. It was a kula, right? So if the water now is raised up to where the dough is, then why do you need, like, it's not a kula. That's the rim of the pot's getting koshered like the inside of the pot now, because it's, right, the boiling water is going up higher. So I looked in the Art Scroll Gemara, and that led me to the Chazon Ish. If you take a look, I don't know if we do. We, should we see the Chaz? What do you? Yeah, I'll let you, everybody vote. Do you want to just like read? We're only going to do one. We can read the notes of the Art Scroll, or we can see the Chazon Ish inside.
See it inside.
I think I prefer to see it inside, and you can look at the Art Scroll notes on your own. So if you look into the bottom right here, and this is all based on Rashi, and I copied the Rashi right above the Chazon Ish. So but you could look at that too. So if you look at the top line, Avodah Zarah, Ayin Vav, Amid Beis, Ma Bolo, Benitzotzos, just as it absorbs a treif with splatters, Apolto, Benitzotzos, so too it expels it with splatters, right? That's what, how Rabba explains Rav Akavia, Perish Rashi, Vaharan, Bib Perish Rashi, Vaharan, in those two Perushim, Mevuar, the high Gedanfa, that this lip, this the dough lip, that's the term for the dough lip, Hu Kadeshu Yalu Amayim, Marasicha, Alsfasakli. That the purpose of it is so that the water and the boiling, meaning when it boils over, it'll go on the lip of the kli. Umavur, Daha de Amar Yore Katana Sofiyor Gedola, Eno Kedela Hagil Gami Bachutz. So this is making this actually the first point that I made before. The Rav Huna wasn't saying, when he said you have to dip it in, he wasn't saying you have to. The purpose of dipping the small pot in the big pot wasn't to kosher the outside of the pot. You don't need to do that. Because the boiling on the inside expels from the whole width of the thickness of the wall of the pot. Ella mipnei shi'afshar l'malo sakli alkol gedosav. The point of dipping the smaller into the bigger is because you can't fill it up enough that it's going to kosher the rim. So Amru, the Yagul Yor B'Soch Yorah, So therefore, that's why they said you dip the smaller one into the big one, because that takes care of the problem. So this is where Rav Akavia comes in, and he has a new idea. Build this gedanfa, the dough rib. But even though, how is he helping? A dough rim can't hold water. So he has a totally different assumption than the one that I was working with earlier. She'ain gedanfa delisha machzekes amayim, because a dough lip doesn't hold water. So then what are you accomplishing? You can't fill the water above the level of the pot anyway, of the rim of the pot. Mihu alayde gedanfa yachlam alosa ba'ofen shiyu batuach. Nevertheless, if you use this rim, you'll be certain, you'll be able to fill it to the extent you'll be certain shemei olam lo nismali yosem me da'ashta, that you never filled it more than it is now. Because you're never going to fill a pot all the way up to the top when you're using it to cook your clam chowder, because it's going to spill all over the place. So therefore, it's always an inch or whatever it is below the top rim. So this dough rim allows you to have the confidence to fill it up to the very top, or if not to the very top, at least higher than you ever did before, or you ever normally do, because even when it boils, v'gam kishiyarsiach, yiyu batuach shirasicha, avral kol suhazukli. So now you're filling it to a level that when it boils, and it starts boiling, and which increases the volume of the water, and it's going to start bubbling over the sides, now you know it'll hit all the places. You can be confident, you can assume, it's going to hit the edge in all the places. We don't need to see the rest of it right now, but that's the point. Meaning, this makes sense. How Rab is explaining the chiddush of Rav Akavia, that we're kashering with splatters. Right? It's not talking about filling it up above the lip. It's talking about below the lip, and the only way the lip is getting kashered is from the boil, the rolling boil, pushing the water over the edges. So that seems to be pshat in this Gemara.
So it sounds like he's explaining it that the point is not about the splatters, right? It sounds like he's just saying that you can be sure that you're filling it up to the right amount. It's kind of what it sounds like, no?
Why does that? So how does that kasher it? You mean like the walls itself? To kasher the walls itself?
Is no, that? I'm saying, is he saying it's absolutely like the nitzotzos, right? I thought you said last time that means like when it comes out,
splatter?
Yeah, like a splatter, yeah.
Well, he is talking more about, what he's talking about is less of a splatter and more of the boiling over. Which is, I think it's probably hotter than a splatter, but it's not like being in the pot itself, because it is like exiting the surface of the water. You know, it's extending beyond the surface of the water. So, you know, the kibolo kachpoto may not be exactly, it could be it's more powerful than a splatter. The splatter is detached, right? It's like disconnected and hits the rim. You know, he's talking about something that's not as detached, but it's still not the same as being inside.
That's what the Gemara means when it says nitzotzos. That's what it's referring to.
Yeah, he actually says that at the very end. He says v'nitzotzos tekaamar, hainu babue harasicha. The nitzotzos he's talking about is the bubbles of the boiling. Yeah.
So what's his? What's the kasha and his resolution to that? Which he says, like, it's not, the dough can't hold water, so what's
right.
the point of this thing? And his answer is that it does hold the water?
His answer is that it allows you.
Leaks through the water? Like, meaning the boiling water will leak through because it doesn't hold water, and that's how it operates? Like, I don't understand.
Well,
you brought up the fact that it shouldn't work.
Well, it doesn't hold water, meaning it's not going to, if you use it, try to use it to extend the level of water in your pot,
yeah. It won't work.
That it won't do. But
yeah.
I guess it will, if some of the water boils over and hits the dough, it's not going to go over the side of the pot and put out your flame, you know, underneath the pot. So you could fill it. You could fill it more.
That just
you fill it much more than you usually would, or could.
That just sounds like the same thing. Just meaning, like, it sounds like his resolution is ignoring his original question, which is that it shouldn't be able to go higher because this is a dough layer. Like, you know, it's a flimsy thing, right? And that makes sense.
No, I think the distinction is that I think it can hold the bubbling over because it's gonna fall back into the pot. It's just
okay.
It's just like a shield.
So it can hold the bubbles, but not
right. It's just that's just a momentary contact. It's gonna go back in,
and that's where it's koshering, meaning the bubbles.
When they jump up, it koshers.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have happened without the dough.
Without the dough, you're right.
You're losing
water. I think what's going to happen without the dough is it's going to put out the. It's going to bubble. If you fill it all the way to the top of the pot and then boil it over, it's going to spill over and put out the fire. That's what I think. And you're not going to.
I feel like that would also
kosher the
get
pot,
the lip.
Well,
no, that would get the lip, right? You
maybe
know, it bubbles
get some
over.
Of it, and it'll only get some of it, and then put it out. Maybe you need it to
right,
really
like
boil
like
over
a,
more. Like the first boil over is going to put out the. Like it's only going to boil over a little bit at first, and then it's going to.
So you're saying you get a complete bubbling of everything, and then
right,
it'll.
Then it'll be kosher.
Okay.
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to relate exactly to what, you know. This dough arts and crafts are, but let's go back now to Shear 43 sheet, and we were talking about the psukim, and we'll just chazer this briefly so we can get to the main event here, and you should be very you're very fortunate to be here tonight because this is a beautiful, beautiful sugya and an unexpected chiddush. I've been thinking about this whole thing for the past week and a half, and I finally, earlier today, figured out the key to unlock the understanding of this whole thing. And it's like, hopefully, you could say Birkas HaTorah tomorrow morning with new enthusiasm. So basically, what we were talking about. So these are the psukim about. We're not going to go into all the details that we were able to last time, but we will start. I'm on the second page of Shear 43 sheet. These are the psukim after the War of Midian, and the Torah tells Elazar Kohen tells the soldiers coming back from the war, who had all of the pots and pans and dishes and cups of the Midianim, there were the spoils from the war, he told them, you can't just go use them. You have to kosher them. And Rashi said that's the first part of the pasuk. If you look in Chaf Beis, Aches HaZahav Yesakasev, anything made of gold and silver, Es Nechoshes, Es HaBarzel, Es Abedil, Yesofaris, copper, iron, tin, and lead, all these different utensils. Kol Davar, Asher Yavo, Va'esh, Taviru, Va'esh, anything that comes into the fire to cook with it, you should pass it through the fire, V'taher, and then it'll be purified from being treif. Ach, B'mei Nida, Yischata, but it has to be purified with Rashi at Tupshatim, either sprinkling water, meaning you had to use the ashes of the paraduma to be, because it was tame with tumas mace. Or the other pshat, which is a little bit more relevant for us, is that mei nida means not the waters of sprinkling, but the waters that a nida immerses in, meaning a mikveh, meaning the halacha of tevilas kelim, of immersing utensils before using them, even when they're kosher. So let's just go with that pshat, that Rashi holds that the mitzvah of tevilas kelim, of immersing a utensil, is a halacha midoraisa, It's a mitzvah midoraisa that's from this pasuk. So the first part of the pasuk is saying kasher your kli and then toivel your kli. Right, take out the treif absorptions, the flavor absorb flavor, and then do tevila. And then the second part of the pasuk, v'chol asher lo yavo ba'ish, anything that's not used in fire, let's say a drinking cup, like a glass cup or something like that, taviru b'mayim, you should pass it into water. So Rashi says, you could look at the very bottom here, taviru b'mayim matbilon v'dayo. Let's look at the first Rashi, for the second to last Rashi. Kol davar she'ein tashmisha l'yadeya, or anything. The first part of the pasuk was talking about, and we'll see this more in the Ramban, either something used directly on the fire, a grill, grate, or a pot, which is like water on the fire. The second part is talking about the cup, kol davar she'ein tashmisha l'yadeya, or you don't use it with fire, kigon kosos usluchios, or cups or jugs, she'tashmisha mitzoni, you only use it with cold, v'lovalu iser. They didn't absorb any forbidden food. I mean, there's no belios here. There's no absorptions of treif. What do you do with that? Tavir b'mayim, that you just have to pass into water. Matbilon v'dayo. You toivel it. V'davka klei matechos, it's only metal equipment. That's a halacha already in Tevilas Kelim. We're not talking about the details of that right now. But the point is, Rashi says, you don't really need to kasher a kli that you bring back from the treif kitchens of Midian that's not used with hot. You just have to tevel it like you would if you buy a new kli, right, from someone who's not Jewish who made that kli. So those are the two halachos. That the first part of the pasuk is talking about kashering and teveling. The second part's talking about cold things you only need to tevel. There's no kashering apparently. What if the kli is dirty? Let's say it's a cup, but there's some stam yenum, or some non-kosher wine residue in the cup. What do you do there?
Rinse it off.
You rinse it off. Right. Does the Torah telling you to rinse it off? Does the Torah have to tell you to rinse treif off of a cup before you drink from the cup? What do you think?
You're still putting it in the water.
Yeah, you're tefilling. Oh, so it's already going to get rinsed off.
Yeah, that's the difference.
That's a good point. That's some people say that, yeah. But let's say you're taking a cup from a Jewish person that got used with treif.
So you still put it in water.
Let's say right, I owned a cup and someone poured non-kosher wine in my cup.
It's still water.
Huh?
You just still put it in water.
Right, you don't have to tefill in a mikveh.
It's not absorbing anything.
So. Right. So what do? You wash it off. But is the Torah telling you, in that case, of a cup of a Jew that was used with a non-kosher liquid?
You're saying you don't have to put that in the mikvah?
No, definitely not.
Really?
Yeah.
So.
Because you didn't, it belongs to a Jew.
That's right. Only dishes that you acquired
from a non-Jew.
Yeah. So how do you make this? You acquire this from a Jew, it's just that it touched.
Let's say I take a cup from the Daskal's house and I pour non-kosher wine in it.
Right.
And it's still got it. We poured it out, but there's still some in there. I want to use that cup now. What do I have to do?
You see, all you have to do is rinse it out. Cool.
Well, all you have to do is rinse it out, but is according to Rashi, is the Torah saying anything about that?
You're saying no. So.
No.
No.
No. It's not saying anything. And why isn't it saying you have to wipe it out or rinse it out?
Well, why are you assuming that it has to be addressed here?
I'm not assuming. It's just Rashi's saying if you have a non-kosher cup, you have to do is toivel it.
But he's specifically talking about the cups of these non-Jewish Midianites, whereas
right.
you're bringing a case of a different case
okay,
of
but,
a Jewish person.
But he's saying even if it's a Midianite, unless you say like David has a nice point that whenever you toivel something, it washes it off. But that doesn't necessarily wash everything off, right? Let's say they ate pudding in it, and it dried, treif pudding, and it dried on the clam chowder, right? Cold clam chowder. And it dried on the side, and you dip it in the mikveh, there's still some clam chowder on it. You have to actually re-dip it in that case, probably. But the point I'm trying to make is that Rashi doesn't have... He doesn't say you have to take the clam chowder off, but of course you do have to. But he just says that there's no mitzvah to do that. The Torah says you can't eat clam chowder. So obviously if you want to use a cup that was used with clam chowder that has clam chowder on it, you can't use that until you clean it. But but there's no... You don't have to... That's not koshering. That's just you can't eat clam... Right? There's nothing wrong with the cup. It's just there's clam chowder and you can't eat clam, so you have to wash it off. So but the Torah, there's no mitzvah chowder? To do that. Like, it's not... Right, that's fine. But
you
of course,
have to, you don't have to. If it's clam chowder, you don't have to fire like.
No. If it's cold clam chowder, I mean, I don't know how you eat clam chowder, but if it's cold, that's why I was using the wine example.
Yeah,
but you know,
something doesn't absorb.
If it's cold, if it's cold, it didn't absorb into the kli, into the cup, right?
This is also ignoring kavush because that's a
right. It's ignoring, right? Yeah. Let's assume not. Yeah, regular cup. Okay, that's just the point I'm making here. Rashi doesn't say you need any specific cleaning. He just says you toivel it, right? But he would, of course, agree to clean it because it just makes sense. You can't use a cup that has treif in it. Of course, you have to clean it. Okay, take a look at Ramban now. So we're gonna try to get the main parts here. The first part, and we're going to, should we use the Hebrew or the English here? I don't know, the English is much longer. let's see. He has kashas on Rashi. Rashi says the end of that pasuk is saying you have to be toivelet, right? The cup. Pass it through water, taviru b'mayim. He says, that Ramban says, that's not how the Torah says immerse something in a mikveh. And I'm on the bolded part now. Taviu b'mayim is the language the Torah uses to immerse something, not taviru. So, okay. And that, now look, those parentheses are wrong. But if you look, so basically, to summarize so far, he brings Rashi. He says, you're saying it means put the cold cup. The cup only used the cold in the mikvah. That's not what these words mean. So, second thing is, after those reverse parentheses, which is Vayikra, I'm like 10 lines down. Va'od, furthermore, Sha'afa Kalim, Shetashmisha Mitzonain, Srichin Hekshim in Ha'isser. Utensils that are used with cold, like the wine, the cup that had treif wine in it, they need to be kashered from Isser, Shebahen, that's in them. Milvada tevila hazo. Aside from being toivel them, immersing them like you would a nukli, something that has been used with treif, even though it's cold, you have to kasher that. Ve'echlo yazkir heksheran kasher asa bebaim ba'ish. How could the Torah not mention how to kasher a cold cup, just like it already did when it said how to kasher something used with hot, the grill grate or the pot? You have to kasher a cup too. Ukeshalamdu chachamim tevilazu. When the sages learned that you have to immerse a new kli in a mikvah, they never mentioned this pasuk that Rashi is saying. Eladarshu in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. Ach b'mein nidal yischata. Mayim shenida tovelis b'hem. So the first part of the pasuk where Rashi says that's toveling the hot, like the pot. He says that's where the rabbi said is talking about immersion. About perish tavir b'mayim, what does it mean? So now he's saying his own pshat. What does it mean to pass something through water? It doesn't mean put the cup with the treif wine in the mikvah. It means l'chabsam, to wash them, l'shafshevsam, to scrub them b'mayim yafa, with water, well, thoroughly. Achitasra chaluda. Until you remove, literally, chaluda is rust, but it also means residue. Shenidbaka mehem mina iser, that got stuck on the non kosher cup from the prohibited substance. Shenishtamish b'hem, like the pudding, right? Let's say the clam chowder. Shezehu heksherin mina iser. This is how you kasher a cold thing from Isser, by washing it. Yomar kasuv dover shetashmisho ba'esh. So this is now he's summarizing something they use with fire. Taviu ba'esh. You have to put that in fire. Kederek shahaya tashmish bo b'isura. This you had pork on your grill. You have to go kasher that with grill with fire. Im tashmisho ba'or mamish. Go on a barzel on a choshes. So now he's saying, like, the first metals mentioned are things that actually go on the fire, iron and copper. Vegam hakesev azov, and also silver and gold. Milabino baor. I'm not sure how gold holds up in fire. The imay rechamin, and if it was through a hot liquid, kagon habadil, whether it was tin or oferes or lead, magilo bechamin, you dip it into hot water. Vedava shalonish tam shuvo. Ba'esh, something that never was used in fire. Now he's going to our pasuk that we're talking about. Elon v'tzonein, it was just used in cold. Tadichu oso b'mayim, that you wash in water. Actually, it's marek until it's clean. V'yitahir, and now it'll be purified. V'kach amru chachamim. This is what the rabbis actually said. Madichon u'madbilon. This is a brisa, I believe, which we'll see in a moment. Or it's actually in our sefer. That is how you kasher. You have to wash it, even though it was only used with cold. You wash it and you tovel it in a mikvah. The two steps. Okay, I think that's the main part of the Ramban. And then at the end, I'll just mention what he says. He says, and I further take, let's do this part in English. I further take into consideration that this immersion, meaning immersing a kli after you buy it from a non-Jew, is a law of the rabbis. Meaning he's saying the whole idea of Tevilas Kalim could be only a Dirabana. Okay, so now to summarize, we have two opinions about a cold cup. How do you, that was used by, for non-kosher, or was bought from a non-Jew, a used cup. So, we'll read this Hebrew part here is from Berkowitz. Lefi Ramban, this is Aleph. So there's two machlokas about 2 points. Lefi Ramban hadacha lekli shetashmisha b'tzonein kelula b'parshas hechsher kelim. The obligation to wash a kli that was used with cold, that appears in the Torah's rules of how to kasher things. It tells you how to kasher hot. It tells you how to kasher cold. V'ilu l'Rashi, however, according to Rashi, einena midin hechsher. According to Rashi, it says nothing, washing a kli has nothing to do with the laws of kashering kelim. Sherei ha-kli lo bala iser klal. This kli didn't absorb anything. V'lo chal lov shem iser. There's no, it doesn't have a status of a prohibited kli. So this kind of goes back to some terms like an Isser Heftza that we've used before. Berkowitz is saying that according to Rashi, the fact that you have a tray food stuck to a kli, that has nothing to do with the kli. That's just a tray food, right? The kli is fine. It didn't absorb anything in there. Like if you have a tray piece of meat next to a cup, not even touching it, right? That doesn't affect the cup. If it's touching it, it also doesn't affect the cup, right? It just makes it dirty, and now there's some meat residue on the cup. The meat residue is usser, but the cup's not usser. According to Ramban, however, it sounds like once a cup is used with non-kosher wine, it gets a status of a non-kosher cup, even though there's nothing treif absorbed into it, because it's all cold, and it requires Hechsher. The Torah talks about that. And the second thing, the second machlokas, second disagreement, I left out that part. The second disagreement is Rashi has the Torah, he has no hesitation saying the Torah says you have to immerse new utensils you buy from a non-Jew. The tevila is min haTorah. And Ramban entertains the idea that immersion of kelim is only midrabanan. The simple ramification for this is if a katan, if a miner is allowed to, if you could just send, like, if you have some new things to send to the mikvah, can you send your kid with them? According to the Ramban, you might be able to. According to Rashi, you would not be able to, because a katan is not reliable for Torah laws. And the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins like Rashi, right? It's how we assume.
Maybe it could also be relevant to, like, in the early COVID period when we said, like, don't bother Tovlin Kalin. Use it for now and Tovlin it later. And maybe if it was a derisa, maybe they would say, like, listen, just hold off on buying new Kalin if you can't Tovlin them.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, good point. Okay, so now let's, for lack of time, there is evidence like Ramban that holds you have to kasher. It's actually in the Sefer. There is evidence like Rashi at the very bottom. There's a Gemara in Chulin. If you use a knife to slaughter a treif animal, one opinion holds that you just wash it off. You don't need to kasher it. One opinion says kasher, the other one says wash it off. So the Gemara paskins, hilchasa afilu bitzone. You can even just wash it in cold water, this knife used to shecht an animal. The ika belisa defrasa, if you have a tattered piece of a curtain, lemichpere, that you can use to wipe off this knife. Lo tzarech, you don't even need the cold water. You could just wipe it off with the shmata. So that seems to be evidence for Rashi's position, meaning if, according to Ramban, who says the halacha is that if you have a kli used as something treif, you have to wash it. The Torah says taviru b'mayim. It doesn't matter if you have a shmata. You can use a shmata too, but you have to wash it with water. That's how you kasher this kli. According to Rashi, this makes perfect sense, right? You have a shmata, just wipe it off. There's no treif on it. You can use it. There's no reason to wash it in water. Okay, so now what this will conclude with this understanding, and we won't read through this whole thing, but first of all, how do we paskin? Do we paskin like Rashi? That, right, if I take a cold cup, right, is it part of kasher and kalim to rinse it? Or, let's say it's totally clean. Do you have to rinse it? It seems like Ramban would say, Rashi would say, no reason to rinse it, it's totally clean. Rashi would say that. Ramban would say, you have to rinse it, right? It was used with non-kosher. You have to rinse it. So, if you take a look at this, this is the second page of the new sheet, Kashering with Hadacha. This is from the Art Scroll book, Kosher in the Kitchen, or whatever it's called, by Rabbi Forst. So he says, Hadacha, which is rinsing, it has two applications, and we're going to talk about this more in our Sefer. It's used, first of all, it's a preparatory step before other types of kashering. If you're gonna kasher something by dipping it in boiling water, it has to be clean first. You have to do hadacha. You have to rinse it, you have to wash it, you have to scrub it. The second, number two there, hadacha is also a form of kashering in itself. When a utensil was used only with cold non-kosher food, the required method of kashering is hadacha. Since heat was not present during the use of the utensil, no taste is absorbed, and heat is not required in the kashering process. Merely washing the utensil thoroughly is the required and sufficient method of kashering. Now, who does this sound like so far? Sounds like Ramban, right? Sounds like we're strict to say you have to do it. And it's interesting to note that the second type of hadacha requires the first as well. When kashering with hadacha, one must first clean the utensil from any residue and then rinse it again in water to kasher it. Meaning, it's like a formal kashering method, like, the Ramban didn't exactly say this. He kind of described it more as scrubbing. But he's saying that, like, you first have to just clean it. Everybody says you just have to clean it. Like, you can't have any treif. But Ramban says, like, let's say when I'm cleaning my treif cup, I only wash off this part. No. Like, you Like, according to Rashi, that'd be enough. According to Ramban, you have to wash the entire thing. And that's what he's passing in Halacha L'maaseh. Now, where does he get this from? You can see the little box below, the footnote 170, see Mishnah Berurah. So, if you look at this Mishnah Berurah, he's talking about a slightly obscure case. But he's talking about kashering a cup. So, it is at the top left of the sheet. So, b'shtifa, if you rinsed it, it's good enough. He says, d'hainu sheshifshifo techila. First you scrub it, heitiv b'mayim, kedei lahasir kol ha-davakalav, to get any of the treif off. He's actually talking about kashering something for Pesach here, that is only used cold with chametz. So first you scrub it to get it off, v'yachar kach shetofo b'mayim. And that, so once you clean it, then you have to rinse it with water. So you see here the Mishnah Berurah seems pretty clearly to be paskening like Ramban, which is pretty fascinating. Now, this is what troubled me for the past week, and we don't have time to talk about it in detail, but I'll share with you this yesod. What is the purpose of this procedure according to Ramban? I mean, this kli is not treif. Meaning, we understand the purpose of libun and hagala, right? There's absorbed, treif is absorbed into these kalim, and you have to either destroy it, right? We talked about how exactly it works. Either you destroy it maybe for libun, or you expel it with hagala. We understand why you have to do that. And then you toivel the kli, right? You immerse it. That's totally something totally different. But in this case, according to Ramban, what's the purpose of this washing? Why do you have to do that? You're not expelling anything. You're not destroying any flavor. There's no flavor to talk about here. That's question number one. Question number two, it's a bit redundant. First you have to rinse it with water, and then you're going to be toiveling it. So it's essentially toiveling not in a mikveh, right? It's rinsing. You could do that anyway. You could do it in your kitchen sink. And then you have to toivel in a mikveh. They're like, they're very similar procedures. What is this, according to Ramban? Like, what's the purpose of this? Any thoughts before I give it away?
I was thinking that, first of all, it's a xeris of hasu.
Okay. Could be. Okay.
And that also that like when a woman goes to the mikveh, she's washing herself first because
it's just let me just say about the Gzeiras HaKasuv point, meaning
you'd normally like to have a time.
Well, no, but not only that, meaning kashering your grill or kashering your pot is not a Gzeiras HaKasuv, right? It absorbed, the Midyanim just used this to cook pork yesterday. Now the soldiers are coming home. Before using it, they have to get that out, right? It's very much not a Gzeiras HaKasuv according to that, right? It makes a lot of sense.
Right.
So now to say, oh, with the cold, you have to wash it, it's like, it's just like it doesn't do anything. You want to say something else?
Well, no, I was just thinking that, like in general, like the reason for requiring this redundancy would be the same way that we require it for before a woman toiles in the mikveh is, like, in other words, first, like, she has to wash up any makeup, whatever it is, it's not a similar case.
Okay.
Because in order to do the tevila,
right,
you can't do the tevila while there's foreign materials there.
Right, that has to do with chatzitza. It's an interesting comparison, but that is to prepare. I mean, this doesn't seem to be mentioning about preparing.
Mm-hmm.
According to Ramban, it doesn't even mention toiveling in this part, you know?
Right.
David?
So Rashi says you have to go to the mikveh and put this article in the mikveh.
Yeah.
And Ramban doesn't even say you have to go to the mikveh.
Well, he agrees you have to.
You have to.
He agrees you have to, but the pasuk's not talking about that.
So they're both the same. It's just that Rashi doesn't mention you have to put it, you have to clean it first. So most
right.
people, if you have an item that you use every day, most of us will wash it before we use it again.
Okay.
So just because Rashi doesn't say it, he probably isn't going to eat from this. He's going to dip it in the mikveh.
Yeah.
He's going to take it out, and he's going to see there's stuff in there. He's probably not going to eat from it either.
He's not, but why isn't he? Because obviously you can't
for
eat treif. Right, but the Torah doesn't have to tell you that. It already right. told you you can't eat treif, so you're not going to do that.
Once you put it in the mikveh, he's going to say, Rashi says, there's no treif in there anymore.
Okay, but the difference is, let's say a Jew's, a kli, let's say we tweak the case a little bit, Rashi applies this no matter what the case is, right?
Yeah,
even if you go into my kitchen right now and you put clam chowder, cold clam chowder in my cup,
uh-huh.
Rashi says there's no obligation to wash that. You can't eat, right? You obviously have to, but
yeah.
the Torah doesn't say you have to wash it. So if I only put it on a little bit of the cup, then you wash that off. You could wash that spot off or wipe that spot off and you're done. According to Ramban, even if it's just that one spot, you have to wash the whole... It sounds like you have to wash the whole kli. That's certainly what seems like the Mishnah Berurah is saying. You have to wash it. That's koshering a cold kli. It's koshered with cold water. Yeah.
Maybe you could argue that... so let's say, if you have your item that was only used with cold, and you just want to put it in the mikvah and then find your... Then you can use it. So in the mikvah, you don't scrub it, right? You just put it in.
Right.
So there's no like actual cleaning process. So you could say like, hey, you won't be so careful now. Like, hey, maybe there's something small on. I don't know, but like you could say maybe there's something small on it, or you're not going to be so careful with it. So you need something really to make sure it's totally clean. You need to rub it off actually. Like you can't just.
So you're saying that the washing is preparation for the immersing?
Well, I'm saying the immersing. I know you were saying about how like you're already putting it in a mikveh, but the mikveh doesn't actually clean.
Well, let's take the mikveh out of the equation right now.
Right, fine.
Let's just say you went into my house and or whatever. You know, we took a kosher kli that belonged to a Jew and put some clam chowder in.
Right. So maybe because you're not going to be so careful if you know it's only used with cold. You know, you don't have to libun or agol or anything, and you're going to see it looks pretty clean, and then you're going to use it. Maybe you're gonna miss something, no matter how it was used, you just need to scrub it off.
That sounds more like a rabbinic law. I mean, the Torah doesn't usually say do something just in case. It just says don't eat treif, right? So you have to now.
Yeah. Well,
real quick, because I want to just.
I figured the mikveh is the spiritual component. It's not. To clean it physically,
okay.
It's to spiritually cleanse it.
Okay.
So the we as physical beings see the residue. We're going to clean it. So it doesn't necessarily have to like tell us to like we're innately going to clean it. It's only going to tell us the spiritual requirement.
Well, the mikveh is the spiritual part, right?
Right. So it's going to tell us
Let's say you have my clam. You took my cup and you put clam chowder in. We don't have to go to the mikveh with that kli. So why do we have to wash that? Even if clam chowder is only a little bit.
Real quick, I'll just suggest maybe what is it? It's based.
I like the way you're going though, Parker, because you are predicting where I'm going.
Kibbolo kahpolto was a clean dish when you put the. If you're going to rinse it, the same way it got treif from the when I push a wine at your house.
But it didn't get treif. It didn't absorb anything.
That's where the Ramban's chiddush is.
Kipolo kachpoto. The way it absorbed it, right, it didn't absorb.
But the Ramban's chiddush is that koshering is itself a mitzvah, and for cold things you need to kosher it. It's not really fully kosher yet.
So what's the purpose of what does koshering do? So take a look at at this. This is Rebel. This is Rebrovsky. Rabbi David Brovsky. This is from the Gush, the VBM website. We're on the same page here. I'm starting right here. So I'm just going to read a couple snippets here. Why must we kosher utensils? So the first paragraph is kind of what we just went through. He mentioned something that he mentioned before, which we haven't really dealt with yet, is when we say that utensils absorb flavor, is that a biblical law or a rabbinic law? That's what Tom Ke'iker. Is that midoraisa or midrabanan? Something he mentioned earlier. Again, we didn't cover it yet. So he says here that if you hold that the absorptions in a pot that was you cook clam chowder in your pot, that's the case of Midian, right? That's the case we're talking about in the Torah. The Torah says you have to kosher that. So those who say that absorb flavor in a pot is a Torah prohibition, this parsha of koshering makes total sense. The Torah is telling you to kosher it because it acknowledges whatever the Midianim did with it made those kalim prohibited from the Torah. Now the Torah is telling you how to rectify it. But those who say that Tam Ke'iker, that a treif kli is only treif midrabanan, what's the point of koshering? How do they understand this whole parsha in the Torah? So if you look at the very bottom here, the Ra'ah cites the Ramban, who apparently also grappled with this issue, as viewing the requirement to kosher utensils as a mila she'asu bekelim, a unique stringency, similar to the requirement to toivel utensils. So now he just asked this question that I was kind of sharing a moment ago. The Torah required that utensils of Midian be subjected to two similar processes, koshering and tevila. So what's the difference? So here he says, this is his chiddush. One may suggest that through the somewhat symbolic act of hachshara, of koshering, which extracts or destroys that which is absorbed, meaning, why is he calling it symbolic? Because according to this opinion that he's talking about now, it's only rabbinically forbidden to use a clam chowder pot. So why does the Torah still say to kosher that? Because the Torah looks at it as symbolic, but you're still doing something, right? You're extracting or destroying that which is absorbed in the walls of the utensil, despite its halakhic significance. By doing that, one severs, meaning that opinion doesn't hold that the absorptions aren't there. It just holds that the flavor of clam chowder is in the pot. It's just the Torah didn't prohibit that, right? It's only it's insignificant according to the Torah in this view, right? So why do you have to kosher it if it's insignificant? Because you're severing the utensil from its past associations. This is like a spiritual, so to speak. Afterwards, one immerses the utensil in a mikvah, sanctifying it and permitting its future use. So it comes out that koshering utensil could be the mirror image of toiveling the utensil. So, meaning the toiveling utensil is this is the way the Rishonim explain that it's like someone who converts goes in the mikvah to sanctify themselves and to become Jewish, right? It changes their status by immersing in a mikvah. The same thing applies to a utensil that was owned by a non-Jew to become part of a Jewish household. It has to be immersed in a mikvah, and that changes its status. So what Rabbi Brovsky is doing is he's transferring that same yesod, that same concept of what tevila does to koshering, that but instead of sanctifying it for future use and permitting its future use, it's severing it from its past associations. So so that's if you're talking about things where the utensil absorbed, like the grill or the pot, so you're extracting things, you're literally detaching it, severing it from past connection because you're extracting the flavor. So now there's some other ramifications here we're going to skip, but at the very bottom of this page, he mentions the debate we're talking about right now, the debate between biblical commentators. turn the page. We're going to skip this because we just did this whole thing. So so look at the paragraphs. Others see Ramban on the last page here. Explain that any utensil that has absorbed Isser through contact with heat, okay, it has to be koshered, etc. Okay, now go to the end. So if so, one may ask, the end of this paragraph, the middle paragraph, what is the second verse referring to? Some explain the Torah is merely stating attention did not absorb a prohibited taste, rather came into contact with a prohibited substance without any heat, must be passed through water, must be washed. So that's the Ramban, right? This explanation seems rather odd. Isn't it obvious? Must the Torah command us to wash our dishes? So that's what Rashi would say, right? He would ask on the Ramban. So one might suggest that we might have thought that this utensil must also undergo a process of akshara. Meaning, even though you never used it with treif, maybe you have to put it in boiling water. Because because the whole point here, it has to do with some type of spiritual, metaphysical reality. You're trying to detach the kli from the past. So maybe, even though it was only used with cold clam chowder or treif wine, you have to kosher it in boiling water. The Torah comes to say, no, you just wash it. So now when the Torah says no, so is it totally rejecting that concept and saying you don't have to detach a kli from its past? Or it's saying you do have to, but just not through boiling water, you just have to rinse it. That's enough to if it was only used with cold, you detach it from you detach it from that past by just washing it. So that's what he kind of concludes with here. One may suggest that merely washing utensil is also considered a form of hacharas kalim. This seems to be the explanation of the Ramban. So he says kashering kalim is not just a process of extracting or destroying Isser, rather than an attempt to demonstratively separate the utensil from its past, even by a token act of washing it before sanctifying it for its future use. So with tevila. So again, so if you use a kosher kli for clam chowder, cold, so that also has to be koshered, because you have to, even though it wasn't a non-Jew using it for non-kosher, this in this case it still belongs to a Jew, you still have to detach it from that past use. You have to kosher it by washing it, according to Ramban. It's a form of koshering. You don't have to dip it in a mikveh, but you still have to kosher it in that method. So so this I think, explains what the purpose of this whole thing is, according to the Ramban, that it is very, it's a parallel, and this is why I said, Parker, like what you're saying, it's like spiritual aspect. It's similar to Tevilas Kalim. It's just a mirror image, right? It's like, has a subtly different purpose, but they're very similar processes. So that's some food for thought. But now we understand, like, what in the world, even though there's no absorptions, why there would even be a concept of koshering according to Ramban. And so that's what we see here. Thanks for joining me tonight with this extended explanation.